And now I'd like to recognize representatives from the Missouri Public Utility Alliance. Review on our utilities.
Madam Mayor, Council. I want to introduce, we've got several members from Missouri Public Utility Alliance present. Council should have received last week a copy of the peer review report. Hopefully you guys got that. Be sure to ask questions if you have any. Hopefully you guys are ready for anything. This isn't the entire peer review team, but I have with us here is Chuck Bryant. He is the general manager of Carthage. Hugh Lawson, who is COO or CFO for Missouri Public Utility Alliance. And then Randy Norton, who's over finance and all things ARPA related. Randy and I spent quite a bit of time just talking about peer review, but ARPA funding. With that, I'll turn it over to this group.
So I hate to turn my back to everyone here. I feel safe, but at the same time, I feel always awkward standing in front of others. So I apologize for that. And Yul is the COO of our state association. CFO would be an upgrade for him, so let's make sure that we have that set straight as we move forward. Well, let me first say it's an honor to be here with you this evening, members of the council. I appreciate your time in hearing us as to the evaluation and review of your home-owned utility. Let me first say, this has a special place in my heart because when I took over, I've been in Carthage now for 25 years, and I learned a lot from Mr. Paul Jensen and a lot from Mr. Kyle Gibbs over the years and asked them a lot of questions, had a lot of phone calls. So for me to be able to be in this position and maybe give something back to your community that's helped Carthage and me in particular, it feels really good. So I appreciate Randy and Yul including me in this peer review. And let me also say that there's no one size fits all. We're all a little bit different in our communities. You have stadium chairs in your council chambers. We have folding chairs. And your setup is beautiful and gorgeous, and ours needs a little work. We have 10 members of our council, and some may say that's too many. Some may say that's not enough. I don't know. I'm very fortunate to have a utility board like Jeff does, and we all have a certain role to play in our communities with the delivery of the services critical to the needs of your community, and we all have some way of doing it. But universally, there are some things that we can look at one another and take best practices from and get some guidance to as we move forward. You've had a copy of this report in front of you, I guess, now for almost a week or quite a while. I'm sure you've read it front to back. It's captivating reading. And I will do my best to answer any questions that you may have. But what I'm going to do today is simply do a 30,000-foot view of some of the information you've maybe already digested. The municipal systems are set up in many different ways. I think our system in Carthage is somewhat similar to this. I have six utility board members appointed by the mayor, ratified by the council. We have great working relationship with members of our board that have been on there for many, many years. I think maybe I met one that has been on your board for quite some time as well. That continuity has been critical to the success we've had in Carthage. The understanding of all that goes on in a utility system can be daunting at times, and I have spoken to other communities that have seen the revolving door with whether it's council members or utility board members. It is very difficult to educate and bring up to speed all the topics and all the issues that we have to discuss and deal with on a daily basis. So I think, first of all, the structure that you have is great. Having the utility board, we feel as though, and I say we, I'm going to include these gentlemen as well, certainly feels as though that this is the most responsive. It allows for deep and thought and focus in a very specific, complex area, and the utility boards quite frequently seem to rise to the top when it comes to the cities that have the most effect on a positive economic development and prosperous way in a community. So the overall observations, you have this. I'm just going to go through page one a little bit, and that will conclude it. But the overall observations of the utility, and it, this really, this first section looks at the return on investment. What do you have? What does this community get other than outstanding service for providing, for having the Board of Public Works or however you structure yours here? What is your return on investment? MMU provides electric, drinking water, and wastewater, and now broadband services at no charge to the facilities. This service is at $197,000, valued at $197,455 annually. I hope that the word does not get back to the city of Carthage, because we have we charge our city for these services at a 30% discount of standard rates. That's a great service and a great opportunity that the utility gets to provide back to the city, and compromises one very important component to your return on investment. The electric fund annually transfers approximately $1.6 million to the city. The water fund annually transfers approximately $200,000 to the city annually. And like most of us in the utility world, we donate and have various ways to have in-kind services and labor and materials. And for Marshall, that's to the tune of $28,274 a year based on last year's figures. Now you may say, how does that work in my utility? How does that work in your system in particular, or your community? You know how it works better than anyone else. You know the value that you get from your utility. You know how you're able to utilize those funds to make improvements throughout your community. And it's certainly understandable, and I think it's a great benefit to your community. The utilities are operated and financially well managed. That's always the first part you want to hear as you get audits and things like that. Everything is good. There's no big cliffhanger at the end of this. You're operated well, and this is something that probably comes as no surprise to you. Financially, the system is strong. There are, like everyone, there are some best practices to suggest to further enhance operational and fiscal management. This doesn't mean that there's anything wrong in what you do. It's just different. And as utility systems change and get ready to tackle the oncoming impacts that we always have to tackle, as we look at some of these best practices, there are things that can be implemented. One unique perspective to a utility relative to the city is that it is a rate-based structure. Everything that goes on in the utility world should have a kilowatt hour and a rate, and a gallon or a CCF and a rate. And if you start there, you can build whatever you need throughout your system, and you can create great returns for your community, as mentioned just a minute ago. But in this process, that is different from looking at what most often city councils see as a tax base, and how to fund all the things that the city needs to fund with very limited tax resources. The utility has a different structure, and it's a different model to begin with. So as you set up that at the basis, you're able to look through items 2 and 3 of our observations and begin to maybe see an understanding as to why. So item A, recommend developing a long-term infrastructural and capital planning for addressing system upgrades with a particular focus on the drinking water and wastewater utilities that bear older infrastructure. If you're anything like Carthage, we've got pipes in the ground that are 100 plus years old, and we have to have ways to upgrade that. And I was in this very same situation with many of these bullets just 7 years ago, trying to understand how best to set us up for the future, and part of that was looking at our capital planning. We have to have a very standard 5-year plan that evaluates each one of our infrastructure components individually to determine how best to meet the demand of what your city needs moving forward. And a 5-year window, quite frankly, is not enough anymore. Today's world with procurement issues, you know, it takes us 2 years to get a transformer that used to take us 6 months. That there's an ebb and flow to that, but certainly as you look at long-term development of your community, whether it's economic development, the city limits the growth of it, or the improvement in your infrastructure, you have to have a 5 to 7, maybe even a 10-year plan. And as you look across the country, that is a very standard process. So we recommend looking at that and really focusing on the drinking water and wastewater utilities, because they are a drain coming your way, drain literally, coming your way. And from a financial perspective, it is enormous, the amount of upgrades, and the cost is substantial and the upgrades in your infrastructure there. So developing that longer-term infrastructure and capital planning will certainly address that. We also recommend adopting a formal reserve policy to better facilitate the use of reserves to the respective utilities. When I was first set hired as the general manager of Carthage Water and Electric, now I said I've been there for 25 years. I was not always the general manager, but I've been a part of the system. And one of the first things that we discussed in my utility board and city council was making sure the utilities stand on their own. You know, the water system, the wastewater system, the electric system, all should be able to stand on their own and fully function and provide the service needed for the critical development of your community. When we look at a reserve policy, that allows us to take that first component of long-term infrastructure and 5 to 7 to 10 years out infrastructure development and reserve and set aside funds to be able to meet the demands that you're going to put on your system over that period of time individually. And that's very important, and it will come, there'll be a point in time in which you see that is important for us in Carthage. We had not had one until 7 years ago. We created our reserve policy. We set aside the idea and the plan and the goal to have the utility stand alone, and then we created a reserve policy that has some differential between each one of those departments so they do have the funding needed so that they don't always have to borrow between one another, or when funding becomes available, very critical in the city of Carthage, we had to utilize the state revolving fund for a $5 million, well, about $4.5 million wastewater expansion. And we had done, like most communities do, interdepartmental loans. And while that feels good to do that at the time, and you have some money to do it, what happened to us is that we were going through the funding process with DNR and the revolving fund, we found ourselves in a position of not being able to fully sustain the improvements needed with the rate structure, because we borrowed money from the electric like everybody has over a period of time. So we adjusted our rates to make sure that A, the system can stand on its own, and the reserve policy focuses on its individual ability to stand. That is a mandate that you will get if you look for funding, is does this service have the ability to fund itself? And if not, you begin to see some issues. Consider the process of providing internal loans borrowed against the utility funds, as they can levy a financial burden upon ratepayers to finance projects irrelevant to the respective utility. And I kind of addressed that a little bit. That's just a tricky area. Most communities have done that in some period of, in some fashion form as time has gone on. But if you can take the element of standing those utilities on their own and build your structure behind that with regard to your reserve policies, you begin to eliminate those crossovers that, quite frankly, drive the cost up on your electric side to fund water projects, or inadvertently don't allow you to capture the true cost of your water service because it is being subsidized in some way by the electric. So that's certainly areas that we would want you to look at. And again, this doesn't mean that anything has been wrong over the years. It's just moving forward, best practices is the way to look at it. Item three, areas for general improvements. Recommend developing a formal communications plan. You know, this kind of is a 101 thing. As you look at utility world, it seems complicated. We walk into a room, we flip the light switch, and the lights come on. Do you think about it? I know we don't. You just walk in and it works. You turn the faucet and it works. You flush the toilet, it works. Now we push enter and we hope the internet works. In that sense, as you create this very simple service that is critical to your growth in the community, whether it's economic development growth, whether it's whatever need in growth or replacement that you have, it's a very simple idea. The problem is that they're very complex on the back end. So in your efforts to make that transparent to your customers through the billing process, through media, through whatever it may be, developing that formal plan for communication that you can outreach to your everyday customer, and most importantly, some of these very large industrial customers that you have here. They want to understand what you're doing, understand how it can impact rates over a 5 to 7 to 10 year time frame. And they want to be a part of that process, and it's very key. Item B, recommend developing succession plan within MMU with a focus on the IT and broadband department. We're doing the same thing. We had, in fact, Jim, right? It's Jim, isn't it? Yeah. Back in the day, we borrowed a lot of information from Jim and worked to build our, and we are just now in the middle of a $7 million project for a fiber to the home in Carthage. We're doing it a little bit different from, you know, we are using some contractors and less of our electric folks. Y'all did a great job in building that, and it's a true economic development tool in your community. I say this at Capitol Hill. I said this last week in Washington, D.C. to Mr. Billy Long and to Senator Roy Blunt and Senator Holly's staff. Economic development anymore, the top two questions you get is what's your water supply look like? Three questions. What does your water supply look like? What kind of wastewater capacity do you have? And do you have broadband service available to your community? And if you have that, you are ahead of most. And that's outstanding. One area that we saw that might want to have some attention drawn to it would be in your broadband succession planning. When all of that knowledge is built in one person, that that can be dangerous. And we've hired a bunch of nerds, is what I call them, and we have a whole nerd herd now. But we also make sure that we pay attention to that succession planning and share and cross-train throughout our department on the IT side. It's an ever-changing, rapidly changing environment, and certainly the efforts that is going on here that Jeff is leading and your board is leading to develop broadband throughout the community sets Marshall. In fact, Senator Hawley's staff, when we started talking about broadband, said, you mean like what City of Marshall is doing? So they're aware of what you're doing, and you should be very proud. Item C, recommend performing an insurance evaluation to bring better balance on insurance protection and implications self-insurance on the long-term plan for MMU. I think that's a very standard one. We actually completed that about 4 years ago in Carthage, and it is something that probably should be done every 10 years. To make sure that you're evaluating that property, maybe more than that if things change rapidly. And last, under item three, recommend clarifying line items on customer utility bills to provide for a better understanding and transparency. Like I said earlier in one of the other bullets, I think it was the first, that transparency on such a complex business structure and all that goes into Marshall's involvement in the power pools and how DNR regulations hit. When you have that transparency on a bill that a customer can see, kilowatt, money, total, that is outstanding for the customer. As those things change and you add and make them more convoluted, it gets very hard. In fact, what we just did in Carthage that I would love to share with Jeff was we went from units to gallons, because we need customers to understand how much water they use. We certainly are all in the same boat when it comes to energy conservation and water conservation, but you would be shocked how many gallons of water you use on a regular basis, and making sure that transparency is very clear and understanding the customer. And your bill is your monthly communication tool, and to have on that bill every bit of information of how the utility operates and what you're being charged is critical. So we felt like that would be a great recommendation. Like I said at the beginning, hats off to the crew that you have here. You have a great system. You have a burgeoning broadband development that is really going to be key in not only your community's growth, but certainly in this county. Jeff does a great job. Having a board of public works is a preferred method. In fact, I met with another community 3 weeks ago who is looking at moving from a regular council department or city department to a board of utility public works within the state of Missouri. The structure is solid. Cities like Springfield, Missouri, and others throughout the country have the same type of structure, and it really does lend itself to some long-term viability and long-term growth and long-term stability. And I think that's evident in the good work that has been going on to date in your community and where you're going as a community as well. That concludes my portion of this. I hope there are some questions that these two other guys can answer, but I'll be glad to do the same things. Randy, did I forget anything?
Nope.
So Randy really did most of the work in this, and so if you find a typo, it's certainly not my fault. But I'll be glad to answer any questions that you may have, and we'll pass it off to these guys. Yes, sir.
Not particularly what you talked about. I was listening.
Oh.
On page 11, your recommendation was consider establishing a gas utility under its own accounting. We've been talking about gas and utilities here for some time. Maybe I read it wrong or I'm interpreting it wrong. Are you saying that we should create our own gas utility?
What we were talking about, and I'll give some of this to Randy, but basically consider establishing a gas utility under its own accounting. So right now, your gas revenues and everything is all bunched in under your electric department. So what the recommendation would be is to split that up so you get a true cost of what it cost you to deliver gas to your customer. And if I remember right, they're very limited.
Separating
those costs out allow, again, when we talk about transparency and that ability to understand the true kilowatt hour component, that is one element that helps. And very good question, because another similar element was your broadband service, and making sure that too stands on its own so that people can see what that cost is. And you're gonna be able to better manage your electric rates when you understand this kilowatt hour costs me this kilowatt hour, and there's no confusion throughout your accounting process. I think, I'm not gonna speak on behalf of any finance person here, but I think that makes things a whole lot simpler for them and very easy to manage moving forward. But that is it, sir. No, nothing beyond creating a new utility. Yeah, no. We certainly don't want that. Obviously, if there's opportunity for a new service and somebody needs something, there you go. But it was mostly in just its accounting and its own accounting.
So the recommendation, though, about developing the gas utility, what would that entail, or what does that address then?
You want to get that?
Certainly. Thank you, Your Honor, and council members for this time this evening. What I was bringing forth, and it's actually come back to your question as well, Mr. Guthrie, you have a gas utility that's generally referred to as having one customer, the ethanol plant. Actually, there are two customers, the ethanol plant and Marshall, that is one utility, because the natural gas is utilized on the electrical generation units as a backup to support the Missouri Public Energy tool. However, as Chuck pointed out, the gas utility is embedded into the electric utility, and the electric utility has generally been subsidizing the gas utility, and if you pull it out separately, it's been running a deficit. Operationally, it pays for itself, but if you look at all expenses together, it runs a deficit. So what was mentioned with that recommendation is if you see an opportunity to develop another customer, someone who can share the rate burden of that utility and lower the cost per customer, that would be a good thing to do if you can develop in the future. I understand that you have an investor-owned utility in Marshall that provides the residential gas service, so I'm really not holistically suggesting you replace that, but if you come up with any other opportunity, there could be a beneficial for the city.
Yeah, so if you look at your opportunity for economic development, you may find yourself in a position to be able to serve some new large load in your community that would help offset, as Randy was saying, some of those costs. But you want to be prepared for that opportunity as well, and that's not something you want to do when you think it's needed. It's something you want to do ahead of time so that you are prepared in the event that that opportunity, whatever it may be, presents itself.
Thank you.
I have one question on the wastewater. We're putting a lot of money into the new system that we're getting ready to build. But we also have an I&I issue that seems to be fairly large. What are other cities doing about that, and what is DNR's focus on that right now?
Well, the I&I, you named it, I&I, and everybody's got something. Yeah, not everybody's got something different. I mean, you have a very, hopefully, you're what we do in Carthage. We have a super aggressive I&I program where we come in, we have smoked the lines, we've camered the lines, that we come in, we grout the lines and the manholes, we put the liner in it and move on. we have worked better in the last probably 2 years at identifying the flow in areas that are where it's needed. There's really no one size fits all for this, right? Because there'll be a lot of coordination with other city staff, with INI in your watershed and other issues. But what DNR wants, maybe Randy would be better suited to answer that. But I can tell you this, whatever it is not cheap. And right now you're in a position, we all are, to receive some very substantial ARPA funding or infrastructure bill funding. And to get some of these recommendations lined out ahead of time is going to put you higher on that list when you can, when you do have and can demonstrate the ability for these services to pay for itself. But go ahead with any something in particular.
Certainly something I would add for the benefit of the folks, inflow and infiltration in INI, the drinking water system, it leaks water. Water gets out. The wastewater system, water gets in and puts a load on whatever the wastewater treatment mechanism is. And so for an INI, inflow and infiltration issue, we always recommend to aggressively address INI. Marshall Municipal Utilities, you do camera work, I think was it 10 miles a year?
Yes.
10 miles a year, and then address that as it can. But in INI, it's a very difficult to address because you don't address it, it's done, it's constant. The weather changes, it gets warm, it gets cold, lines separate, water gets in. Water gets in through the manholes on the street, water gets in from everywhere. The real sticker on that is if you don't pay any attention to the INI, is that every 5 years, that discharge permit comes up for renewal, and you're in the middle of that right now. So when they're looking at that discharge permit, and they're looking at the number of gallons that is flowing through that system, it may make changes in the discharge permit. And one of the challenges with municipalities in particular is regulatory speaking, that is the one place that the regulatory agencies, Missouri Department of Natural Resources and EPA, have to pick on. Point source, the discharge, coming out of municipal wastewater units. You may look at, I know like City of Brookfield puts about 300 pounds per year of nitrogen into their receiving stream. I just happen to know their data. But if you look at the runoff that goes into a stream, it's much greater than that. So there's much thoughts about non-point source that's actually caused an impact on the streams, but the regulatory agencies have the oversight on wastewater systems. So every time, every 5 years, you get a new discharge permit, and it's like they're asking you to clean your bedroom even more. Make it cleaner, make it cleaner. And you can get it to where you're putting water cleaner than the stream, into the stream, and they still want it to be made cleaner for regulatory purposes. And those upgrades on the wastewater system are extremely expensive. So closing, not to get too wordy on it, it's a good idea to have a strong INI program to control that inflow and infiltration. So you don't overload the wastewater treatment process, whether it be a mechanical treatment plant or a wastewater lagoon, depending on the size of the community, which then mandates changes in the next discharge permit, which could be a $5 million plus investment. As one time, as I explained it to Congresswoman Archer, a community will spend $5 million get on their new permit, mortgage that 20 to 30 years, but every 5 years you have to buy a new house. So controlling that INI is a key element. Very expensive utility, and one that can really harm communities is the wastewater utility, financially.
It is such a difficult thing to set a rate to. I mean, obviously we understand how to do that, but the average customer, just, why would this cost me? It's a drain in my house. Why does it cost? But the you know, Carthage sees our lines, you know, we were established in 1898. We literally have 100-year-old pipes in the ground that break all the time, like I'm sure you see here. And to his point with regard to your permitting process, every 5 years you got to make an improvement to it. So we're spending anywhere between $400,000 and $600,000 a year in lining and relining and grouting our wastewater infrastructure in Carthage. And we're not too dissimilar in size.
Thank you.
I had a question. You talked about developing a formal cash reserve policy. So, in reading in the report, the recommendation is 4 to 6 months of expenses to set aside for that. And when you spoke, you talked about what kinds of things those reserves would be spent for. So would that be a part of the policy? Is certain projects would be identified, or just a in case of?
You know, you have a lot of latitude in how you develop your reserve policy. And we sent one to Jeff and his staff here of what ours looks like. And we built it off some of the recommendations that we saw through American Public Power Association and kind of modified it for the water. But it should take into account reinvestment in your system, your expenses that you have, events that may cause some major catastrophe in your community that you have to have the funding for. And we literally used a matrix of several items for our funding, because the established way in a utility is saying we need 4 months worth of revenue, or you know, expense coverage, just doesn't always work. You're going to find, like we all did last year in February of last year, you can run, you know, a system can operate, you know, a $10-12 million gas system can operate 12 months of the year around $10 million and had 1 week of $17 million. And those costs certainly can be included. You know, you don't have that happen every day, but those cost recovery opportunities can be included in a reserve policy, so that that impact to your ratepayer is minimized to the extent it can be. But our rate policy, our reserve policy in Carthage, does take into account expense coverage, and for a devastating event, it takes into account our power supply and what's needed. It takes into account, and also takes into account the infrastructure replacement that we have in front of us, so that we can continually be evaluating. And in ours, we look at it every year to make sure that it meets the threshold that we have. And if that reserve policy is not, if we do not have the money in our reserve policy, it triggers an automatic rate adjustment recommendation to our utility board, and then we reevaluate what we need to do with our rates to help to make sure that the reserve policy is fully funded. So it can say and do all the things that you would want it to in all areas, but having that policy kind of sets that, finally puts the stamp on it for everyone to follow, and then it allows the utility to look at it and look annually to make sure that it's following the best practices it needs to. So yes, it can say that. It can also include other things if you need it to be. Thank you. Did I put everybody asleep?
I had a couple other with the jump word. Well,
did you like how we fanned out here? This is kind of intimidating.
Like, I don't know these guys. Get ready for the next round, or
keep going with questions as long as you need.
Well, I have one clarification to make on page 5 of the report at the bottom. In talking about the city ordinance section, I think there's just maybe a misunderstanding, and it's kind of maybe not in here correctly. In 2017, city ordinance provided for the levy of payment of 10% of the gross electric operating revenue, and then the rest of that sentence. The transfers were actually established in 1985 or before. Mm-hmm. It was just certain changes were made in that year. I didn't want, in reading that, it initially made it seem like in 2017,
right,
all of a sudden these transfers were going, but they were actually long before.
That's a good point.
So, and then the only other thing, at least, that I have as far as questions go, on page 14, where it talks about this recommendation about discounts to city facilities instead of free service, the in terms of using that word pilot, I mean, obviously, a non-taxed entity, it would be difficult to necessarily say they're paying in lieu of taxes if they're not paying taxes from the beginning. Is that just standard of what municipally owned utilities are calling those transfers? Because that's what we're referring to, is that transfer that comes into the city funds, correct?
Yeah, so the pilot and the transfer, we can go through all 80 municipal members of NPUA, and everybody see that a little bit different and understand differently what that means, okay? There are two different things. One can be a transfer. One is a pilot, and you can, in many ways, they can look very similar. But a payment in lieu of tax and a transfer, both relative to your facilities, I guess it's talking about when the provision of the 10% pilot levied upon the electric department, a 5% pilot, or the provision of free services may be questionable practice of transparency. So, as you talk about a pilot or a transfer, both of them, you know, when you look at your bill, should say kilowatt hours, gallons, complete, total, and then at the bottom of that, the percentage of whatever it is, and yours is 10% and 5%, just tacked onto the bottom of that so that the customer understands what they're paying. If you look at the free service that is given to the city on top of it, you have to have, in my opinion, I think the citizens deserve to understand the full impact of the free services given to the city. And in most cases, they're just a discounted service. And that makes sense to everybody. But when you start looking at how a payment in lieu of tax or a transfer, whatever you may call those things, are added to the bottom of the bill, and then on top of that, you get a free service, it becomes a gray area that the recommendation was to clarify those and explain that up front what this money goes to and why it was created in the first place. Brandon, do you have something else you want to add to that?
One thing I would add to that is considering the discounts to city facilities. It's much in the same vein we're earlier talking about the gas utility, where it's always been recognized that there's one customer and actually there's two. Marshall Municipal Utilities is the customer. And then looking at the city utilizing the utilities much as anyone else, recognizing them as a customer, and to give consideration for the benefit of providing transparency and full understanding to the citizens of Marshall that they see that there is a rate base that's being paid by all users, so that no one user is getting supported by the other users. So it's more of a matter of transparency. Mm-hmm.
So the citizens of the community subsidize the free services that the city receives. So there's an explanation that's needed there in our position to explain why that's the case. I think most people probably genuinely feel like the city pays for its bills. City of Carthage, we have a 30% discount on our general service rate that we, the utility, also pay. So the electric department pays the water department. The water department pays the electric department for its use in pumps. Just like the ball fields do for the lighting systems at the ball field or city hall, whatever it may be. That ability to make sure that every single kilowatt hour and every single gallon is captured, whether there's a discount rate or not, I think it makes sense for the city to get to have a discounted rate. But when you look at the free part of it, you begin to start questioning how much of that begins to be subsidized by your industrial customers or just Joe Blow, you know, your grandma next door, whatever it may be.
Thank you.
So how do other cities offset some of the costs that, like that MMU would put on the city, that a utility would put on the city, such as, you know, wear and tear on the streets, mm-hmm. The administration costs? Does it go the other direction?
Yeah.
So we're talking about free utilities and free mm-hmm. services, mm-hmm. but there's services that go the other direction. Mm-hmm. You know, an example of, our electrical department, when we tore it down, it caught on fire. So our fire department came out and put out the fire. They weren't built for it. There's no
right, right, right.
Do other cities do the other direction?
That's correct. So when our fire department has a water, we will bill them the water usage on their big fires. So that's one way. You know, what you enjoy with having a municipal utility, sometimes you got to think of maybe what would this be like if there was a private company, if this was an IOU in your community. They would be enjoying all of those same things, but be paying you probably about a 5-6% return on investment to pay for all the things the city franchise fee. Those are quite often looked upon at that amount. I mean, already at this point, Marshall sees a 10% benefit from the electric side. So it's fantastic. Now, what do other cities do? It runs all over the board, percentages, pilot, transfer, however you want to say it, but roughly falls within some type of guideline that this is a franchise fee. So if Marshall Municipal Utilities was not in business today and you were being provided by a co-op or someone else, they're going to pay you a franchise, but they're getting, more than likely the city would not be getting free services out of that. You may get a discount, but if it's an IOU, you would not, because they have PSC requirements that don't allow for things like that. So I think most folks see the discounted, in fact, quite a bit. I'm trying to think, it seems like, and maybe this is the case, I'm trying to think, there was somebody that we had talked to at one point in time about free service. I think it may have been Marshall. I'm sure there are some others, but a majority of the cities out there do look at some type of reduced cost in their kilowatt hours and water.
Sure. I'm just not sure you answered the question that I was trying to ask.
What do other cities do?
I was going the other direction that, you know, we're talking about free services where you're saying a discounted rate coming our direction. I'm saying, you know, an administration fee when our attorney, you know, the city's attorney and the city administrator review ordinances or city clerk put together the ordinances that are brought before council. You know, there's an administration side to what the utilities is getting from the city. The wear and tear on the streets when the trucks come out and the platforms come down and they clamp down on the roads and we mill and overlay the road. Is there assessments that go back that direction? Do you know, I mean, it's one thing to see the rates coming this way, what the city gets from the utility, but what does the utility get from the city? Is there charges that go the other way? And how do cities address those?
I've not seen, if you said administration fee, I've not seen that in my time, seen an administrative fee in that sense. Randy, do you maybe have, in your experience, have you seen something along those lines and how that would be structured? You know, I'll say in Carthage, if we have a street cut, we're paying for the street cut. You know, if we have damage or something like that, obviously not damage, but normal wear and tear, we do pay that. But a majority of what we talk about, I'm probably still not answering this, is encompassed in the transfer to the city. Right. You know, that's the cost of having the utility. That's a benefit to the city. But here are all the things that we impact, the streets and everything else. Hopefully those costs can be incorporated in the transfer as well to the city. I've not seen anything specially created to address some administrative fee in that sense. And I believe... That can be it. Go ahead.
I can answer this.
Yeah.
So typically, no, you don't see an administrative fee like that in addition to any kind of transfer that you're already making from the city or from the utility to the city. That's typically built in. We have seen some court cases that indicate that any cost like what you're describing is allowable as long as it's accounted for. But it has to be budgeted for in advance. It can't be the city does its list and then at the end of the year saying, okay, here's how much, and we're going to increase the cost to the city by that kind of transfer. So the way you're doing your transfer now is by city ordinance, as I understand it, and it's a flat fee, and that's appropriate under the state constitution according to various court cases we've seen. So typically, to answer your question, that transfer is what should be paying for the cost of some of that wear and tear that you're talking about.
Okay. Sorry, I wasn't able to hit that concise the first time.
Thank you,
Chuck. I'm not that smart.
I earned my pay because that's the first time I've said it.
Chuck. First, as a nerd, we actually prefer the word geek.
Yeah, I know. But there's no good geek way. There's no rhyme with geek. And my guys tell me the same thing.
I think you're right. When you first started, it's a little different for every city. You know, we went back and looked in 2017 when we talked about free services, and Carrollton is one of them that has free services. In fact, I was hoping Paul was here because in 17, Macon has free services as well. And I was curious to see, have they stopped that? You know, what's the situation there? So there are certain other cities that do it the way we do it. And to go back, and again, this is too much history, but the reason why we did it back in 2017 is the Parks Department was operating the red, right? Out of $198,000, $92,000 of it was to the park. And it was for filling up the pool and draining the pool. And that's where it really started. Because if we went back and did 30% or something like that, which I'm not opposed to, it would take your budget from black to red really, really quickly. And that's where, you know, as a city council, we're trying to gauge. We can't just look at one department. We have to look at the greater good of all departments and what's the citizens want. Do they want the pool? Right?
Sure.
Do they want the park? They want new things? Or is there an opportunity for us to benefit everybody?
Absolutely.
That's kind of where it started.
Absolutely. It's a, you have a juggling act,
yes,
all of you do,
yes,
in so many different
yes
ways.
Yeah. So I was hoping Paul would be here to answer, to ask that question, but then we can follow up on that. The question I have for you.
I will say that I do think there are some free service cities out there.
Yes, certainly there are.
You
yeah
mentioned
yeah
are that. So yeah. I think that is, you know, it's not a best practice. It is a practice.
Yes.
And
depending
that's
on
the way
the
to
put
each
it
city.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. How do you handle your transfer and pilot in your town? Do you, if you bill a citizen $100 and you're $10,
they got a percentage on top of that. So
okay,
if their water, electric, wastewater bill is $100, they have a percentage on the bottom of that added like a tax.
Okay,
it's exactly.
So it's a pass through from the citizens who are paying that.
That
tax
is correct.
It's not coming out.
It's not coming out. And again, that kind of goes back to making sure we understand every penny of what goes into a kilowatt hour and what goes
sure
into a gallon. And when you have those components all calculated, then the customer has that transfer dollar or pilot, whatever you want to call that, calculated at the very end as that. If it was another company in your town, they would be doing the same thing. For instance, like we sit next door to Liberty. Now it used to be Empire years ago. Their bill in their other communities is the same thing. It is kilowatt hours, sometimes where they have water, which they actually do. In other communities, they have their gallons, and at the bottom, they have their taxed amount. And that's the same vision that we would incorporate, and a lot of other folks do.
Would that be treated like a sales tax?
Well,
so to speak.
Yeah, that's correct. So it would be a tax at the bottom of the bill, a payment in lieu of tax.
Right. But on every utility versus just,
correct.
Yes.
Every utility
yes
gets that.
If
that
they were privatized.
Say that again.
If it was a private utility, each utility versus today, at least in our case, again, every city
yeah
is a little
yeah
different.
Right.
It's only electricity and water today. It's a 10% and 5%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think the benefit to what you guys have is you have that 10% already on your electric, which is substantial. So that probably is a better position to be in than adding some of the others to that. You know, that's a 10% seems very easy to calculate and easy to understand by the customer's perspective.
My concern is if you have taxes, the whole thing, that's essentially a rate increase. That's not a rate increase.
It's, you're right.
It's going to be interpreted, since you're paying more, that's going to be an increase.
It certainly does, and it impacts the customer. So then we get back to the other discussion about making sure that transparency is very key in all dealings that go on, and why that bill is so very critical for the customer to see that.
I think I know what it is, then I know what I know it is.
Right?
That would make you
exactly.
Mr. Aarons,
yes,
just to go back to your comment about, I thought of another thing on the free services issue. The other, when you do see that practice, the best practice within that practice, if you will, it's not the best practice, but the best practice within that practice is also to be reporting what that free service is every year. So when they go to the council, they're reporting to the council, here's what that free service costs the utility. They're reporting that within the board, and that's another step of transparency that you need to do, because that's also a signal to customers that they're paying for these additional costs. It's also a signal to the council and city leaders that, but for the utility and the value that it brings, I would be paying somebody else that amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think it's reinvested right back in the community. That's
yeah
one of the great points of having a municipal system.
And even to your point, taking a step further and breaking down even more detail, right? The park's $19,000, the police is $18,000,
right,
the fire is $10,000. It might not sound like a lot of money, but mm-hmm when we're trying to buy a new car versus used car, it,
yes,
it certainly helps.
Now, I'm going to put my Master's of Public Administration hat on, my degree that I have in, and say that theoretically, and I'm just talking theoretically and academically, you would say that the swimming pool and others are a utility in and of themselves, and they should be charging user fee high enough to cover the cost of that, because but for your utility that you have, you would be paying someone else. So theoretically, you'd want that utility to be charging user fees of the swimmers.
Sure.
A rate that, of the true cost of what it costs to swim.
Yeah.
Those aren't very fun at all. Those are right. Miserable. We just did the same thing. Our ballpark lighting, the city had been paying for years and years, and they're moving away from paying that and charging the groups that are utilizing the facilities the cost of the utilities, ballpark lights. You know, that seems like that they're on all summer long practically. The pool system in Carthage, the same way. You know, another thing that it does is it if you've got a leak in that pool, there's some incentive to get it fixed when you're having to pay the water cost for that on a regular basis. If you're incentivizing yourself to make sure those lights are turned off and not left on for three nights in a row. And, you know, those little bitty things may not look like a lot, but they certainly add up.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Guthrie, if I may add on something to comment. Something to be cognizant of, you brought up earlier that the utilities is rate-based, and traditionally city governments are tax-based. And so the utilities, and here's where I'm kind of bringing the picture where I congratulate City of Marshall through Board of Public Works. They are striving every day to make sure that the cost of the utility is just where it needs to be. And the ratepayers, and as we brought up, every cent comes out of the ratepayers' pocket. So that's where it helps to be transparent with the public so they see this is how much it costs for my electricity. And then anything that's added above that, that they can see that is clearly separated from that cost of service, which is what the Board of Public Works and MMU struggles every day to make sure that citizens of Marshall are only paying what they have to for that service. And a good explanation of it, and I don't know if you realize it, is like back in during Winter Storm Uri, when most of you were sitting at home watching the television, you were watching people in Texas with blackouts and rollings, Marshall didn't have a blink.
You didn't have one blink?
No.
We didn't either.
I'm not gonna tell you everything.
No, okay, I didn't realize that. Congrats.
We would add a tax to the, like a sales tax, to the utility bill. Would that be covered under the Hancock Amendment? Would that take a public vote for that to occur?
You wouldn't be able to do that.
You already have it in 10% today.
But if we're gonna call it a tax, I know. That's not a tax on the people. I mean, I guess it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you've passed the
vote. But if you put it in that situation, I would think it would have to be under the Hancock.
I believe you're in a gray area there that is an easy conversation to have, but I think you need to have it, if I'm not mistaken.
I'd be talking to your city council.
Yeah, I would too. That's the area that a lot of communities can get in trouble. And you pass this an ordinance, you're doing it today. It's just not line item as it a custom would be for other communities, or maybe as it should be. So having that line item is key, but you do have your work cut out for you on making sure that makes sense and pass the muster on the Hancock Amendment. But that is certainly gray area there that you got to figure out.
And there is a 5-point test that was developed out of actually a lawsuit with the city permit. To determine whether or not that is an unrepresented tax or a fee. And it gets very gray, very gray.
And that's Arbor versus Herman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more than just semantics.
It is.
Right, yes. And that goes back to my some of the lawsuits I was talking about that set the cost of, I think, Mr. Thompson's question on the administrative fees, it's tied to those 5-point tests as to what you can charge for, and it has to have an actual cost involved.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time.
You guys
have a thankless job in many ways as city council, and we appreciate your time tonight, and hopefully if you need anything further, you can reach out to us. Obviously, Jeff has all of our information. Our gorgeous pictures are on the back of it. And we'll gladly be able to. Carthage is willing to help out any way we can. If there's anything that we can do, and obviously our state association feels the same way, please let us know what we can do further.
Thank you.
Definitely the last thing that I would extend. I think actually our membership with NQA is from Marshall Municipal Utilities. And of course, I work with the finance program and assist utilities in financing. I would definitely extend benevolence to the city council if you need any kind of assistance in locating financial assistance. And there's ARPA and there's an Infrastructure Act that's coming through Department of Economic Development. There's several $1 million on the table for economic development coming. Any assistance that I can provide, please do not hesitate to outreach. Jeff has my number.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.